This is Kerry Steller with MMA UK and In the Girls Corner, and I am here speaking with John the Manimal Beneducci. Did I say it right this time?
You got it. See, I told you it's better the second time. We gotta iron a few things out the first time around.
We did. This is round two for John and I. Everybody knows that technology is not my friend and didn't work out yesterday or the day before, but we're back. And we are ready to talk and have a great time. John, how you doing tonight?
Fantastic. Although I did spend my whole day doing a defensive driving class. So, oh my God. So I almost, let me tell you, Long Island is a killer. I got a speeding ticket going down, what is that, Stewart Avenue to get to Law MMA?
Yeah.
They have a speed trap there. It's like a 50, and then you cross you cross one street, and it's a 30.
Isn't that the worst?
So I get pulled over, and it's like 6 points. So I'm trying not to get my license taken away. So defensive driving lowers it by 4 points.
6 points. Yeah, no.
6 points is big, yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, and it does. It like, you're in a lot of trouble when you get points on your license.
Yeah, and then it raises your insurance. I'm like, really? I was like, you had to be a ball buster.
Yeah.
And mess up my shit. Like,
it was Nassau County too, right?
Nassau County. I'm like, you had to mess up my life a little bit. Because why? There's a speed trap? You asshole. You know what I don't like about these laws? So what do they say these laws are for? To prevent accidents.
Yeah.
Okay, and to make the flow of traffic better. But what happens the second this guy pulls you over? He pulls you over in the middle of the road. Now he's backing up traffic, making everyone's day miserable. I'm like, you're an asshole. Because if you would have just let me go, keeping up with the flow of traffic here, everything would have been smooth. Now, you pull me over, you're taking 20 minutes to write me this ticket, you're backing up traffic all along Stewart Avenue, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're a dick. Okay,
yeah.
So, I can, you know,
move.
I almost, hold on, I almost was going to be in law enforcement, and I remember... it was for state police. And I remember I was like 25 and I'm talking to them. And I was like, you know what? You guys are a bunch of brownies. I don't think this is for me. They're like, are you for real? This job makes so much money, you know? I was like, hey, you know what? Nah, I'm good. I was like, I'm not going to just be a professional bull buster.
No, you're being pretty much a professional douchebag, especially if you're right? You know, it's so true. And there's very few nice ones. I've ran into a couple, but when you meet a douchey cop, you meet a real, you know, they're real super douchey.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, you're a regular person. Just like, did you get picked on in high school? Like, what happened?
That
do
happens
need a hug?
Lot. Do you need a hug?
You know, do we need a hug?
Do you need a hug? Do you want to smoke a joint? Is that the problem?
You know, and you know, when they take your weed, you know as a fact, just as well as I do, that they are not turning that in. They're smoking it. They're ripping that fucking citation
so
up.
My wife is a high school teacher, and she's like, that if they catch a kid with drugs, they confiscate them. I was like, and then what? She was like, they keep them in like some special office for X amount of time, and then they burn it all. I was like, yo, you better tell me when they're going to burn it. I'm going to go out and intercept it. I was like, whoa. I was like, that's drug abuse. You're just burning it all. I was like, oh my God. That's terrible. Nah. Although the truth is, I wouldn't touch any of the stuff that those kids get.
No.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust it. But I think I was telling you before, in Vegas, it's off the charts good. Because Planet 13 out there is so good.
Dude, you know what gets me is, like, New York, right? And it's really not even just New York. It's Suffolk and Nassau County that don't want to make it legal. And it's not because of any other reasons other than they'll say it's, oh, well, we don't know what the potency is. You know, it's a gateway drug. They can say that all they want to, but it comes down to dollars and cents and where they're going to put the tax money and all that shit, right? Because I turned around and I was talking to one of my dad's friends who's a politician. And I said, okay, I can refute all of your arguments in 2 seconds. And he goes, well, what? And I said, the potency? Go call your friends in Vegas. Go call your friends in Colorado because we all know you politicians talk. And what they do is you turn around the packet of stuff and it has a label on it. It'll tell you how much of the content, how much percentage of THC. I'm like, so your argument is completely refutable right there. I'm like, and numbers don't lie. Men and women do, but numbers don't. So you could sit there and say, it's true. So you could sit there and say, well, you know, pot's a gateway drug. But you know what? When you get in a drunk driving accident, they test your blood alcohol level. They test your BAC. Not only that, they test your blood, which tests for everything. They do a drug panel, a toxicology report. So when they do that, you don't think that they put on file if the person's on pot? Never happens. You know what I mean? It's like,
yo, I drive 2 miles an hour from high.
Thank you.
I might get a ticket. The only thing I might get a ticket for, the only thing I might get a ticket for driving high is impeding traffic.
Because you go with you too slow.
I'm going slow. I'm chilling. What's the rush?
I might order a bag of Doritos. That's about it.
So we're at the defensive driving thing today, and they're like, what do you do if someone's tailgating you? I was like, usually I slow down.
Yeah.
You know, I usually chill out. I slow down. I'm like, guy's in a rush. I'm not.
Yeah, thank you. I do the same
You know,
thing.
I'm very patient, Kerry. I mean, it did take me 20 years to fight in Madison Square Garden, so I'm pretty patient.
That is. You know what? Speaking about that, great segue.
You like that?
John had a fantastic fight, a unanimous decision at Madison Square Garden, Bellator 222. I was there, present, and accounted for. It was a great card, a great night, and a great night for you. Walk us through
I mean, that would definitely has to rank as one of the best nights of my life. You know what's better than winning at Madison Square Garden?
Nothing.
I'll let you know when it happens. But maybe, you know what, though, Kerry? I'm going to have to be fair here. Maybe marrying my wife was a close. It's close.
It's like very.
It's very close. Especially since, you know, I love to dress up. And I had a Renaissance wedding.
Ooh, all right.
So my wife and I dressed up like we were in the Middle Ages.
And
everyone dressed up in costume.
Amazing.
And we carried swords at the. We all had, like, swords at the wedding. It was great.
Oh, my God,
everyone dressed up. We had a small wedding, maybe less than 100 people, maybe 75, 80 people, but everyone dressed in costume. It was so cool. And I, hold on. So one of my other skills is I've been sewing for, like, 30 years.
What?
And, yeah, so I love making costumes.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. So I love making costumes. So I made like 70%, 80% of the outfits at the wedding. I made the cloaks for me and my groomsmen. I did all the alterations.
I am so my
wife. The only thing I didn't do, I don't know how to do corset boning. My wife wore a corset. So she ordered the corset and like her underdress. But everything else I was on, you know, I was. I got a funny one.
Side note, before you keep that thought, because I might have something for you. I'm a theatrical makeup artist, so I'm a big fan of putting together Halloween costumes for people, but I can't do the sewing and the outfit. My friend was like a circus freak, a half man, half woman, and she had to have somebody tailor the outfit, but I did everything else. Dude, you could do the outfit. I could do the makeup.
I can make most things if I have a pattern, but alterations... You know, I mean, I could do pretty much a good variety. My wife is a senior advisor for a school, so she runs prom. So at the prom, she does, before prom, she does a prom fashion show. My wife collects dresses, so people donate dresses and suits. They do a prom fashion show, and then the kids, from what they see in the fashion show, can then get those dresses. So for the fashion show, she comes home one day and she's like, shit. She's like, we need to alter these dresses, like, on the fly, like, before they come out on stage. I was like, oh, you know, who's going to do it? She's like, you. I was like, what do you mean, me? I was like, you got a whole school over there. She's like, no one knows how to sew. I was like, stop. She's like, I'm serious. She's like, no one knows how to sew. I was like, no way. So I'm there, of all the things I do. And this was, so I'm training for my fight at the Garden. And I'm there, and I'm sewing, I'm hemming pants, I'm altering dresses. Some girl is like, I want spaghetti straps made into a racer back. So I made like a little piece of fabric to make it with.
Have you ever talked about this on a podcast with anybody?
A little bit.
I was like hoping I would be the first one.
Oh, no, because Lauren, you know Lauren who trains with us?
Yeah.
Lauren Brack, yeah. So she...
She's awesome.
But she knows that's like when we used to work out together. And she knows that I helped her actually lose a good amount of weight for like one of her first fights back. But now she's pretty solid. She's great. Yeah. So, but while we were training, you know, I told her I, you know, that I like to sew, And so she asked once on the MMA and Beyond podcast. So I'm the co-host of MMA and Beyond, yep, with Ray Longo and Steve Maraboli. So she had asked once on there. So I did talk about it on there once, but not in this extent. So I'm backstage and I'm altering the dresses. And one of my wife's coworkers that didn't know me was like, oh my God, they hired a professional seamstress. That's so amazing. I'm like, first of all, I would have preferred Taylor to seamstress. I like that. But no, I'm like, this isn't, I was like, this isn't my job. I was like, I'm just here helping out. And one of the gym teachers is like, looking at me. He's looking at me. He's like, aren't you a professional fighter? Aren't you supposed to be fighting in like 4 weeks? I was like, yeah. Is there like something disconnecting in your brain? Because nothing's wrong in mine. I was like, I like to sew. I like to, you know, I like to wrap people up. I like to,
perfect. Yeah,
I'm a Renaissance man. I'm the last Renaissance man. I had a Renaissance wedding and everything.
Oh my gosh, that is, dude, that's
so, that's why
blows me away. I love it.
Listen, that's why I like to label myself the most entertaining fighter in Bellator from the start, not just the fight. All right, the fight, listen, there's more entertaining fighters, fine, but as far like in the fight, but as far as from the start of the contract, from the day I signed my contract to today, I'm the most entertaining. Like, the second I signed the contract, I'm hyping it up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm animal training camp, guys. I'm running barefoot in the woods, which I love to do anyway. My nickname is very fitting. I mean, I run barefoot in the woods. I'm really hairy. I growl a lot. So I'm entertaining from start to finish. I came out in the weigh-in with a three-piece leopard print suit. And they were hating on me backstage, did I tell you last time? So I'm backstage, and I was the 10th fight. So you're in fight bout order to do the weigh-ins. So everyone's throwing me shade because I'm in the three-piece suit. They're like, oh, this guy. I'm like I don't shit talk. I just entertain. You know, like, I'm not like a crap talker. I don't care. I just like to entertain. I'm putting on a show.
Yeah.
I'm entertaining. And it's me. It's what I like to do.
I
mean, come on. I've been sewing for like 3 decades. I've been sewing longer than I've been fighting. I've been sewing since I'm a fat kid.
I have a question. How did you, like, start? Like, where did you learn?
Junior high school, we had home ec.
And that's how you learned. You know, and I'm
so everyone
say,
had
the
to do it.
Thing
and then
that
listen,
they need to
so
teach
I,
life skills.
So we had home ec.
Yeah.
And I really liked sewing. I liked it. And hold on. Oh my.
Right this time, we didn't turn you upside down.
Hold on, I got disconnected.
Yes.
Okay, now I'm ready. So I had home ec, I remember asking my teacher, I was like, oh, I really wanted to make something. I might have been a cloak, actually, because I always liked fantasy stuff, and I used to play Dungeons & Dragons. I still play Dungeons & Dragons, actually. Before the fight, I make our characters, and I roll us off and see how I should do it. And I mean, I'm usually the far superior grappler, so I always know where my bread's buttered. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. If I'm good at jujitsu,
came with the fucking taco.
My wife and I are always on the fence if we want to try the taco or not.
I got tricked into it.
Have you tried it?
I got tricked into it. I was shooting pool, and one of my teammates turns around and he's like, oh, he's like, are you hungry, Carrie? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I got a taco. And I'm like, thinking it's a taco about to, so I just literally opened it and started eating it. Didn't even think. And I'm like, what is this? And he's like, that's a burger. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You just gave me a garbage taco?
You know what? They could have been a little more creative.
Don't do it.
Why didn't they make a burger taco?
You know?
Like, put a hamburger in a taco. You're Burger King.
Yeah,
put
you can't reinvent the taco. It's just
put a hamburger in it, though. You know, put a hamburger in it. Like, if KFC wanted to make a taco, yo, throw a chicken strip in that bitch. So sewing. So I remember asking my teacher, I was like, listen, it's going to take me more time. A cloak that's nice is 8 panels without the hood. So 8 panels is a lot of work to sew 8 panels, because you have an inside and outside out of lining. And then if you want a hood, that's another issue. I wanted to put pockets. So it was time consuming, because we also had to make like fur home ec, a pair of pants, a shirt, right? Basics. So we would stay after class And I did that for like 3 months. And then I remember I bought my own sewing machine because my mom wouldn't let me use her because I broke all my toys as a kid. I'm kind of rough. So I bought my own sewing machine. It was like a Kenmore sewing machine. It was like $79.99, but it was good. And I think I still have it, actually. It's like one of my faves.
That is
so I've always loved sewing. So look, I came out in the suit, you know, I custom fitted my suit. That was leopard print. So I now to come out to the cage, I only was able to bring the hammer of Thor, Mjolnir.
Yeah.
And now it took a lot to get that out. I'm like, they were like, we're backstage, like, what are we doing with Beneducci's toy hammer? I'm like, it's not a toy hammer. I was like, I tell the commissioner, I was like, tell him it's a religious symbol.
Not a toy hammer.
He's like, Beneducci says it's a religious symbol. And they're like, oh, fine, let him come out with it. I was like, yes. I was like, I'm telling the guy, I was like, listen, I was like, if I wanted to come out with a cross, it's fine. I was like, people come out with their country's flags. I was like, I follow the old ways. I'm like, I have the runes tattooed all over me.
I love it.
You know, the Viking runes. I have a symbol for Odin on my back. I was like, this is religious discrimination. He's like, fine. They're like, Beneducci says it's a religious symbol. They're like, all right, let him, fine, whatever. So I came out with the hammer. I raised it high. I called out to Odin outside the cage. And it was just great. You know, so I got to put on showmanship. But yeah. If I was in Japan or if they put me on the main card where I could do more. Because the main card, they let you show. Like, look at Alina Way. Yeah. She comes out with the crew. I would come out with, like, four girls dressed like the Manimals animals, four different animals. And then I'd come out with a hammer. But the sacred warriors of Odin are called Ulfheidinar. Like, you've heard of a berserker, right?
A what?
A berserker. You never heard of the word berserk?
Oh, yeah.
To go berserk. So to go berserk, the etymology of that word comes from the Viking warrior known as a berserker. And a berserker, they were like sacred warriors. They would wear the skins of bears and induce themselves into a battle frenzy and perform like amazing feats of badassery. And they said, so Odin's special warriors... So they would get lumped in with berserkers, but they were a little different. They're, instead of the bear, they adopt the wolf as their totem. And so I would come out with the wolf skin then. If I was in, like, Japan, I would come out with the full wolf skin, the hammer, four girls dressed like animals. I don't know if I would do it to, like, honor Odin and do his animals. So Odin has a bunch of animals, two ravens and two wolves. So I don't know if I'd have them dress up like two ravens and two wolves. Or if I would just have a mix of animals, like have one be a leopard, one a raven, one a wolf, and like one, I don't know, a zebra or something. I'd have to think about it.
Awesome. And Bellator does let people that do the main card, you know, if they want to, they can have like a big.
They do give them a little showmanship, which I like.
Yeah, because it was.
I think entertainment's important.
It is important, you know, like I was hearing people's walkout song get cut off in 2 seconds. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, are you kidding me? Come on.
I waited for a certain point in my song to come out. I waited. Right. I came out to, I'm from Brooklyn and I fought in New York. So I came out to Biggie.
Yeah.
All right, I love Biggie. So I came out, he has a song Victory that has like the beat of Rocky.
Yep. I remember that.
But the first verse isn't Biggie. The first verse is, I forget which rapper it is.
No, because I remember I was listening to it and I was like, is this? It is.
So I waited to come out for the second verse where Biggie comes in.
So smart.
Yeah, it takes a lot of patience to do that. The thoughtfulness, that's what I'm really proud of. I was thoughtful like every stage.
I love it.
Of the game. Thoughtful in my preparation.
I love it.
Thoughtful in my approach. Every piece of it, I was taking my time. And I think it looked like it in the fight. I took my time.
Yeah.
I did what I had to do. I know we talked about it before, but the thing I tell myself the most before the fight is Goldilocks. I'm like, Goldilocks. Not too hard, not too soft, just right. Everything has to be just right. Because my first fight back, after 10 years. Not this one.
Incredible to me.
The fight before it. I hadn't fought in 10 years. And I came up a little short. And it was because I lost my composure. I tried to go too fast. I tried to go too hard. And I looked at it. And I was like, man, you know, there was opportunity there for me actually to win that fight. If I could have maintained my composure. But better I didn't. Because I learned a lesson. Better to lose that fight and win at the Garden. Unimaginable feat. The best way you can have a comeback. Yeah. To lose one, then come back and win. You know, absolutely. It's funny. My manager was like, don't worry. He was like, even in Rocky, he loses the first fight.
Very true.
I was like, you're so funny. I was like, bro, you know, everyone's like, I think it's funny after the fact when people tell you, oh, I knew you were going to win. Or they're like, you knew you were going to win. I was like, no, I don't. The fortunes of warfare are always doubtful. You don't fucking know. Everyone thinks they're going to win. And it's easy to say it afterwards. Afterwards, everyone wants to color the past with their present. Yeah. But at that time, you don't know. Everyone
Anything can happen.
So I thank the gods that everything went the right way. And I had a lot of pressure. I had a lot riding on that fight. It was my wife's birthday. And I was like, man, I don't want to ruin her birthday. I was like, just don't wind up in the hospital.
How'd you get her to let you do it?
So my manager calls me. He's like, you're not going to believe it. He's like, they got an opponent for the Masters for the Garden card. I was like, nah, stop. He's like, serious. And they told me the opponent, Kenny Rivera. I was like, oh, all right. We looked him up. I was like, okay. I was like, it's a good matchup. You know, good for both. It's a fair matchup. The kid's good. He's a upper level purple belt in jiu-jitsu. So he's better at jiu-jitsu than both of the guys, Dylan Dennis, will put together. So can I get on the main card and fight that guy? I think it would be a good scrap. Even if I had to do it at 170, I'll swole up. I know how to lift weights. I'm little. That guy can't hit me. 5'5".
I'll swole up. I love it.
I'm 5'5". I use everything to my advantage.
Turn on
YouTube. I use what the gods gave me. So if
you're
I'm short.
You're 5'5"?
Yeah, I'm short.
You're my height.
Oh, we can see eye to eye. I am average. I'm average height for a human girl. That's okay.
Yes, but you know what's crazy is I have like one of my girlfriends who was doing her hair today and she goes, you're really 5'5"? And I said, yeah, why? She goes, Carrie, you look like you're at least 5'10". I said, oh, I have 40 inches of legs. I look like a giant. It's so weird.
Oh, is that why you do look tall?
You're like, there's no way you're 5'5". And I'm, no, I really am.
You do look tall, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Do you wear heels, though?
No, I just, actually, it's really funny. I got yelled at by one of my friends. I went to an event, and they took pictures of me in front of the Step and Repeat. And I was wearing my Converse sneakers with the studs. And he's like, you know, Carrie, you looked really great until I looked down and saw that you were in sneakers. And I'm like, but you know, that's like my signature shit. I'm like, one of the only chicks that can get away with sneakers and a dress. So a couple weeks ago, I went out, wore heels. And I said, I'm like, hey, look, I'm wearing heels for once. I can. But no, I'm always, always in sneakers and people think I'm a giant. It's so weird.
Maybe you have really good posture.
I do. I carry myself extremely tall. Because
if you have good posture, it does make you look taller.
Yeah. And I carry myself like really like I have a strong state, like a strong personality stance. I like to, you know.
Do you train? I didn't ask you.
Yeah, I try.
Carrie, do you train?
Do I what?
Do you train?
I did kickboxing when I was younger. I actually would love to train, like really train. I hit pants for the first time in 4.5 years, a week and a half, two weeks ago, and I did great. And my friend was like, you really know how to punch. I said, yeah, I wasn't lying to you. But I got injured, and I was really, really apprehensive to throw punches. But, you know, when I was doing my physical therapy, I tore both my shoulders. And I plateaued, and I said, you know what? If what they're saying isn't going to work, when I stopped doing it with them, I said, you know what? I'm going to do everything that I did in training and kickboxing, and I'm getting my form back really
nice. Oh, look at you. Gun
which
show.
I didn't. I was very scrawny. I'm getting my I'm getting my muscles back again. I'm all excited. But it sucks because when I'm 40 years old, so when I was
The same age, you know.
Yep. We look great, BTW. I
think I look better now. And I did. I used to own a CrossFit gym about 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Oh my God. Wow. Quick turnaround time. And I was looking at pictures and I looked like shit. I was stressed.
Isn't it crazy?
I was overweight, which is crazy. When you run a gym, it's hard to do anything but train people. You put yourself second. And look at any, all the coaches that own gyms. They're always second to the to their athletes, which they have to be. And it's tough. I want to be, I love coaching, but I don't want to be tied down to a place because I know what that does. I did it once, and I'm the type of person, first of all, I'm a free spirit. So I like to be able to float around.
Yeah, I feel you.
And so I like to be able to just coach and help when I can and then not be tied down. Like even at law, you know, if I have to help a fighter go somewhere corner. I like to be free. I don't want to have to think about, oh man, is the toilet clogged at the gym?
Yeah.
You know, or is this other athlete, you know, doing something? I don't want to think about managing people like coaches. Like when you run a gym, you have to manage a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. That's why I don't own a hair salon. I could. I actually am very, very, I have a very good business sense and I'm very good at managing stuff. Not really people, because I really am not the biggest people person in the sense of I don't play well with others in a work situation. So I said the problem is that exactly what you said. I don't want to have that responsibility of having to be there all the time. If something goes wrong, I have to do hair. I have to make these people fall to. Not even my thing. I don't want to. I want to work for myself. I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have to work on someone's schedule. I could do exactly what I want when I want to the degree that I want. So there's something huge to be said for that. And, you know, it took me years to learn that. I'm sober 12 years now. And that's why I never became a fighter, because when I was really training hard in my early 20s, I was drinking, doing drugs. And when I finally got sober at 28 years old, you know, that's, you got a shelf life. So I was like, well, maybe I can't, but I did. I started training really hard and I was getting like really great doing like 3 5-minute rounds, twice, 2 or 3 times a week sparring. I was having so much fun. And I was going to get my tattoo done, decided, you know, let me do some dishes, do the right thing before I leave the house. And there was a broken glass and I didn't know it was cracked already. It was like one of those shitty bar glasses that my sister brought home. And I went to go wash the inside and went twice and it cracked in the middle. And I popped my tendon, nicked the other one. So I had a year recovery from that. Finally recovered from that. And I started training a little bit. And not even a couple months later, I tore both my shoulders in an accident falling down the stairs. So, and I did all that with just smoking pot and Motrin, no painkillers.
We're talking about that. You know, I had my shoulder, this one reconstructed twice. Yes,
this one was reconstructed.
So I have my left one reconstructed twice. The bicep reattached, labral tear, 4 anchors put in it, the bone reshaped.
So we have similar
injuries. That took me forever to come back from.
Yep.
And they gave me OxyContin when I first got it done. And that stuff was dangerous. I got a little hooked on it. And then after that, so this took me, I was on the shelf for like a year. I couldn't train at all.
Yeah.
Then rehab took like 6 months. Then for 6 months, I trained with one arm. So I learned how to fight southpaw that's 6 months, awesome. Which was good, actually.
That is really good.
So then I learned how to fight southpaw.
I could do both, actually, as a matter of fact.
Because I like to switch leads. And
it's,
if
smart.
I fight it,
it's smart.
You know what was funny?
Keep people guessing.
My opponent is a natural southpaw, but he came out conventional. And it actually made me laugh when we first squared up. And he came out conventional because I was like, he's going to switch lefty as soon as I pressure him because everyone's going to convert to what they're good at. And I was like, I'll do either.
Natural. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I do either. I was like, oh, that's funny. But I had trained so much against southpaws. I fight southpaw. I had come up in a gym full of southpaws.
Okay.
And I do it also. And so, I'm comfortable fighting any direction.
You know, it's funny, my the best rehab besides doing the what I would have done in the gym, kickboxing and training, you know, I have a heavy bag in my room, I throw a light punch and I don't try to go too hard because, you know, I don't want to hurt myself, but I'm starting to go a little harder, which is awesome. But I shoot pool competitively. And
you said you're good at 8-ball or 9-ball?
I had to relearn how to play pool. In the last 2 years, I've relearned the entire game. I'm still learning and still polishing things that, like, I used to, it was like a walk in the park. So, like, last night I went to a pool hall that I don't usually go to, and immediately this, like, guy beelines for me, and he's like, yo, do you play? Because I have my sticks on my back, and I'm like, yeah, I shoot a little bit. He's like, do you play on any of the teams or leagues or anything? I said, I do. And he goes, well, you here to play? And I'm like, well, no, I'm here to practice, bro. Like, chill out. So I start shooting, and you practice by yourself. I start with stripes, then I go to solid, whatever. And immediately, like, three different people came up and like, yo, do you want to shoot with us? Do you want to play on our team? Do you want to do doubles? Do you want to do? I'm like, just here to practice for a tournament. I'm doing it on Saturday. Like, chill out. But
so you're a professional, so you get paid to play.
No, I'm amateur, and it's really funny because as an amateur, I do borderline get better perks than a lot of fighters. I'll get flown to Vegas for free. The whole trip is free to Vegas for 7 to 10 days. I do make money on tournaments. It's not an incredible amount. I'm starting to do cash tournaments now because there's a lot of them around, which is really awesome. But I have a friend of mine that's a fighter, and he came and watched me, and he's like, you know what's really funny? I noticed that you switched your stands a couple of times. And I said, well, if I can't get to it from one angle, I know that if I move my body to a different angle, and it's usually switching my lead foot, I can kind of tip it a little bit differently, and I'll make the shot in. And he's like, I can't believe you apply. I'm like, I apply so much from kickboxing to pool. Like, my break, I come off of my back foot, like doing a power punch. I come off my back foot, and people are like, how do you get three balls in an 8-ball break? And I said, well, I do a power break. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I invented it. Nobody does it.
It's funny. You know, the lessons from fighting, if you're thoughtful, what you learn from martial arts, like Miyamoto Musashi says, should apply to everything in your life. Fighting is the most relatable endeavor that any human can undertake. Everyone can relate to fighting. And we use the metaphor for fighting all the time. Oh, just getting up in the morning is a fight to get out of bed for some people. I love getting out of bed. You know, yeah. I start my day with the right thoughts.
So well, you have
that's
to.
A big thing too.
You have
like when I was talking to one of my friends this morning, and so mindset's important. What am I telling myself in the fight, right? What are you telling yourself when you walk out?
Yeah.
What do I tell myself the second I get up? I have a 4:45 a.m. client, so I get up at 3:45 a.m. 3-4 days a week, and I tell myself I'm so psyched to be up early to be able to train this guy, who is committed enough that he wakes up to train at 4:45 a.m.
That's amazing.
That seeing me that early doesn't sicken his fucking stomach. I was like, wow, that's great. You know, because I don't know if I could look at me that early. You know? No, I'm just kidding. But
no, but it's true. But
I'm thinking to myself, the first thing I get up in the morning, I'm optimistic. I'm like, oh, man, I'm so psyched I get to train this guy this early that he wants to show up and work out with me. I'm like, I'm psyched. So the second I wake up, instead of thinking, oh, I'm tired, I wish I would have slept more. Now I'm going to be dragging ass. Yeah. He'd be dragging ass for this 4:45 a.m. When he walks in, it's a private. So that means I have to, it's not a class with his other energy. It's my energy and his energy. And if his energy is lame and mine's lame, it's going to be the lamest shit ever.
Yeah.
And I don't tolerate that much lame shit in my life.
No, me neither.
You know what I mean? Like,
what's the why?
I could chill, but I want my energy to vibrate a certain way. I want my energy that, the way my energy vibrated at the garden and the gym, that's how it has to be vibrating. So I don't want to show up with this guy who's depending on me to help him. Pretty much, in essence, when someone hires you as a coach, what are they hiring you to do? To make them a better human. They're like, I trust you. I trust your knowledge. I trust your decades of experience. I'm waking up at 4 in the morning to come work out with you because I believe that you're going to help me be stronger, healthier, right? They believe in what I'm trying to do here. And they see me living it. I'm trying to display what I say.
Yeah.
I'm 39, fighting at the highest level after years off, you know, all that stuff people talk about. I know you have injuries, but if you wanted to do something around them, I'll help you however you want, however you need me to.
I believe that any injury, I've had
the worst injuries.
Social media, with Twitter and shit, I'll help you do all that.
Now, Twitter, is that the next thing I should get on? Because then I could just put stuff out. People really like that I just started doing? And I'll just put the video on me and I'm like, Nate Diaz, Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa's like, are any of these guys going to pass a drug test? You know what I just get like off the top of my head.
Maybe
thoughts? People like it.
Because like they can't really fuck around anymore with that shit. You know, it's like, come on. Like pot is the furthest thing from a performance enhancer. Though, I will say it's not a performance enhancer, but when I, because I used to go into the, I would kickbox stoned as fuck. I would smoke a blunt. Really? And I would be like, Carrie, go outside. You smell a little bit. You got to come back. I don't like to fight
hot. You could fight hot. You could fight high.
I sparred high. I loved it. I
don't get much out of it.
Really? I got most hyper, motivated. Like, I try fucked up shit that I will never try. So I love to, like, practice playing pool high. I do like to, if I'm going to shoot naturally, if I practice high, I can't not do a tournament or something a little bit, because then it just, my whole game is off. So I don't get.
No, you have, how you practice is how you have to do it.
Yes. So I get just a little bit relaxed, just a little bit high. And, like, my coach kind of told me that. Like, I have a coach like you guys do. I have one coach that, like, he will literally sit there, and if I'm at a tournament and, like, he's seen me panic a couple times, and he'll come over and he's allowed to talk to me. And he'll go, yo, why don't you try this? Like, chill out for a second.
So you have, like, a corner man.
In a doubles tournament, he could give me timeouts and stuff, but it's cool. I have other coaches that teach me different things. So it's, you're always learning. And there's a very big team aspect to playing pool that people even don't even know about. So I really do equate it to fighting so hard. I'll play, like, oh, God, a couple weeks ago, I played this guy in nine ball, and it's a point system. Nine ball, it's every racket's worth 10 points. So there's nine balls. Every ball is worth one. The nine ball is worth two, right? So I was playing a guy, and it was a 25 to 25 point race. We both had to get 25 points. And, man, he was killing me in the first three racks, and I have to get punched in the face a couple times to turn on. So I had to take a couple L's, a couple points. He had to take a couple of me for me to even, like, get in my mindset. And I'm like, literally, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I fucking get punched in the face. This is nothing. This is like, I yell at myself. So I get up there and I start hammering the shots. And I'm really like, now I'm playing a defensive game, which is defense wins championships. So I'm like killing this guy with the defensive game. And I lost. But we literally, my friend Evan looks at me, my coach, and he goes, wait, is this, this is the one ball for both of you? Like, this is the winning point. And we're like, yeah, dude, like, this is it. For both of us, like, I shot and I missed, like, and it was either one of us were gonna win. And he's like, I can't fucking believe this is like this game is nail biting. And I said, dude, it was like winning a split decision. I lost. And I say, I actually lost it by one point. And I said, but I felt like I won it. It might, because I came back from such a crushing. He had me by 17 balls and I only had three. So it was like, I came back from being murked. And I lost by a split decision in my brain. And I say it all the time. I'm like, man, that was like the toughest fucking fight ever on the table. It's great.
Exactly. So look how you relate it to fighting.
Yeah.
And so when I fight, when I am actually fighting, you learn so much there. And absolutely. For me, I try to mine the data as much as possible. So I'm not a young kid. So every time I show up, every time I fight, every time I do a training camp, that has to be more meaningful for me than it would be for the kid who could do it more.
Yeah.
So, like, I have to take my time now and mine the data. Like, even from my first fight, it was good that I had a lot of time. It was, like, 18 months between the first fight I had back to this one.
Yeah.
And keeping that mental discipline, that focus with things going wrong, fights falling through.
Yep.
And staying the course and making it. So the fight, not just the fight itself, I learned a lot from that, but the whole camp, the whole process to get to the fight. I learned a ton, and I'm still mining the data from that. That was only what, 2 months ago, 8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
8 weeks. It's quick, because the first 2 weeks, the first 3 days, you're high as a kite. I mean it's like, I don't know if you ever saw Highlander when they chops the other person's head off.
there can only be one Highlander.
In the end, there can be only one. And when they chop, and then they get the power of the quickening, that's how it. Am I too loud, Tammy?
Probably me. I'm screaming.
Oh, no. My wife came out. I was like, am I screaming? So it's like you have the power of the quickening.
Yeah.
And that lasts like 3 days. So for 3 days, you don't feel shit. Yeah. You're just, you know, really in the zone. Then two weeks, I can imagine. You kind of just do nothing.
Yeah. How could you not be? I mean, I would want to enjoy that as long as possible, you know?
That's what I'm saying, you know?
You have a win at Madison Square Garden in front of the biggest crowd in the most iconic
arena ever. I think I might be wrong here. But I've been thinking about this.
Bring it.
Am I the first law MMA fighter to have a win at the Garden. Now, I was thinking about this. Okay, Aljo's never fought at the Garden. Okay,
boom. Oh, we're going to have to, I'm going to have to research this.
Hold on, then, I'm going to run you through it.
My friend's here. She's looking it up for me.
Weidman did it.
No.
He almost did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I acquit
I don't remember if I acquit the fourth of the Garden. Look it up. Then, hold on. Then Merab was winning, and it was the Ricky Simon fight, right, with the guillotine?
Yes.
Right? Okay. And then Steamroller had a draw with Lando Venata. So I don't know. I was thinking about this before.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's a pretty good hat to wear.
I was just thinking about it. I like to give myself, you know, I'm the most positive guy ever. So I give myself like weird awards. I'm like, I'm the oldest winning featherweight in Bellator. And they're like, it's really specific.
I'm the ultimate snack champion.
The oldest winning featherweight in Bellator. I'm like, boom. The most entertaining fighter. I mean,
I love it.
You know, that's what I say.
Listen, you got to be your biggest fan. Like,
Thank you. Listen, I set the stage. No one can be above you in the way you take care of yourself. So no one's going to take care of you
better than you take care of yourself. Nobody loves me more than I do. I'm my favorite person in the fucking
world.
You
set the standard for yourself.
Yes.
So I set the standard. No one's going to be hype about it if I'm not. And sometimes, you know, it's a turn off for people. And those aren't my people.
I was going to say that, you know what? Then
those aren't the Manimals animals. You were at the Garden. You heard the Manimals animals. The Manimals animals, they like the way I am. They're cool with me smoking weed. They're fine. They like to hear me talk about psychedelics, whether they do it or not. So I put myself 100% out there. You know what I've noticed? When I ran my gym, I think I was trying to be something I wasn't. It was kind of like in my head. I was like, oh, my shoulder. I hurt my shoulder. My doctor said I could never fight again. I don't know if I believed him, but maybe at the time I just didn't feel like I could train or whatever it was. There was something holding me back. Really, I had to do that because it made me heal up great. And all that lifting made me strong as a motherfucker from the years of the gym. And MMA was illegal when I was younger. So if I would have fought, I would have been way retired by now. Think about it. Everyone I started with retired like 5 years ago. I turned pro in 2003. Everyone I started with is way retired. I think the last person to retire was Philip Nova. And he retired in like 2013.
Yeah.
So I would have been way retired before.
So MMA, maybe the break was the best thing possible, Layla.
Because I never would have got to win at the Garden. And that's the highlight of my competitive career.
You know what? Honestly, being at the Garden, a lot of people say to me, they you know, they're like, you've done a lot in you know, the short time that you've been doing this reporting for MMA. I said, well, I've only been doing it for 3 years, right? And I've covered every fight except for UFC, and I've now been on the floor at the Garden. I've been to the pinnacle pretty much. I've had my show on Inked Magazine's platform. I could go on and on with the stuff that's happened, but yeah, it's like I kind of have this almost, it's not like I don't understand about it, but I'm like, what's next? There's got to be something, there has to be a next step because there always is for me. Like I look at it like I graduated from doing amateur shows, which is what I first started doing. I first started going to amateur fights. To when I decided to email.
Like Triton.
No, I started with, I think my first amateur show was either New York Fight Exchange or Jackhammer, one of those. Then I did the New York Judo Open. And then I emailed the president of Spike TV. Had no idea that I emailed him. I just thought it was somebody in Spike TV. And I gave him like a really intelligent email of a resume as to why I deserve the press pass to Bellator. And he wrote me back. He's like, that was one of the best emails I've ever read. And here's who you may email. He's like, this is who you message. Here's the link. He's like, I'm actually going to send them your name and tell them like they should give it to you. I'm like, thanks, man. That's really awesome. And yeah, the rest is history.
Spike and Paramount's the same, right?
Yeah. No, now it's the same. Yeah.
Now it's the same. Yeah.
Well,
now
it's Paramount. How I started doing this reporting was a friend of mine and I started a podcast a couple years ago, and we called it High Drama. We would get really stoned and just talk shit. And one day, we started talking about fighting, and we started talking about UFC, and people loved it. And we, our following went from, like, whatever to, like, we were, people really knew who we were. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. We had such a great thing going, and it fell apart. And the last thing she said to me was, you're going to have to do it and do it on your own. And the last conversation we had that was good, I said, we're going to get booths at tattoo conventions. We're going to get press passes to Bellator, like all this awesome shit. So everything that I said that we were going to do together, I've surpassed 10 times over. So it's like, don't ever challenge me. Don't ever tell me I can't do it because I'm going to do it and do it harder, you know?
Well, listen, I'm the only fighter in history that has haters just, like, up into the fight. So I'm the only fighter that gets his balls busted backstage. Like, I've been in a million corners, right? I've been around fighting for 2 decades, and I have never seen anyone get their balls busted like I get my balls busted. I'm like, what the hell? It's like, you for real? You guys know I'm going to fight, right? Like, I'm backstage warming up. And you seen the clip I put up of the iron broom I threw, the sweep that I try to do?
Yeah.
So I'm warming up backstage, and I'm throwing it. I'm practicing it. It's a move I do. And someone's like, really? He's like, you're going to fucking get knocked out trying to do that shit. I was like, motherfucker. And this dude's big. I was like, you fat fuck. And so I go to get heated, and my friend Man, the African Samurai, he's like, you manimal. He's like, brush it off. I was like, you're right, chill. Okay, you're right. So it was the third round, and I'm thinking to myself, I got to throw this move because the guy was, like, hating on it, and it wasn't the right time to throw it. Like, you'll see when I land it the right way because it'll be everywhere. But you know, it set up a takedown. The guy was like, what the fuck? You know, because you never see anyone throw it. So he's like, what the fuck? Yeah. You don't know what I'm doing. But it backs him up to avoid it. And it backed him up right to the cage, right where I wanted to be. So, you know, it worked out in my favor. And I threw the technique that he was, like, hating on.
Bastards. That's awesome. Bastards. Right?
Oh, wait, my leopard print suit. So I'm getting hate.
You know, I got, I'm going to look on your Instagram because I was not at weigh-ins and I did not see that.
If you go, I put up a recent one with Elimele.
Oh, love her.
I love Elimele. She's one of my favorite fighters. I love her style. We hung out for like a second, but I was talking to like an old friend. She was talking to an old friend. Like, I just told her I love her style. And, you know, she's one of my faves. She's awesome. She's showmanship, you know. I would love to go out and train with her. If she listens to this show, Elimele, hit me up. You're one of my faves. She, you know, at least she commented on the pic I put up of me with the Hammer of Thor, because she was like at the production table, and I'm like in the background coming out, and I'm like, did you realize that the son of Odin was right there? You know, it was like right there. But so she liked it. Yeah, she's great. She's one of my faves. She's just like, I don't know. She's so down. And so I was like outside after that. And I was talking to one of my friends. I don't know if you know Harry St. Ledger. He was he's a great judo black belt. I used to train with him back in the day forever. And she was like, whatever. That's not the point. So I'm backstage with the leopard print suit. That's not the point. I went off on a tangent. Listen, I am a little high. It's okay. And everyone's hating. Everybody's hating. They're throwing me shade. And I'm the 18th in line, 19th in line. So Henzo Gracie's there because Neiman fought. And Henzo Gracie's coming up, right? The line. And he's passing everyone. He gets to me. He's like, Poha! He stops. He's like, my man, you got more style than Muhammad Ali. And I start cracking up. I was like, thank you. I was like, thank you, Master Enzo. And I was like, just trying to put it out there. He's like, let me take a picture with you. Henzo Gracie asked to take a picture with me.
That is awesome.
Now, everyone goes from being hated on me
to loving you.
I was like, fickle motherfuckers. You know?
You fickle. Funny like that.
You fickle. For what? Because Henzo, like, I had to get Henzo's approval. You couldn't appreciate my style until that? All right. I liked my style from the get-go.
That is.
So then after that, and you know what? I had a great dance partner. My opponent, he was like, listen, we're at the Garden. He dressed up like Assassin's Creed. And Henzo's like, do you two know each other? And we're like, no, we're fighting each other. He's like, you coordinated? And we're like, no, it's just... So I had a good dance partner, you know. Kenny Rivera, tough kid. He wanted to put on a show, too. It was good. And a tough guy. Made sure he didn't lull me into a false sense of security, either. Because he came to fuck me up. So you gotta be careful.
It's true. You do gotta be careful.
Be careful. It's a lot of money. Listen, sometimes you bring the pain. Other times, mental.
Yeah, sometimes you hammer, sometimes you the nail, you know?
So the mind game is very important. And in the fight, too. Keeping your composure, getting the mental game there. What do you tell yourself? Yeah. These things are important.
Absolutely.
And, being able to have the showmanship. Think about it. The confidence you have to have for me to come out like that. I tell you what. Matt Serra was like, I mean, it worked out because you won. And I was like, you know what? Whether I won or lost, I still would have.
It worked out anyway.
It worked out perfect, of course. But, Listen, I was happy I got to be myself. And I think you can never go wrong. No one's ever said, you know, I was really true to myself. I'm not happy about it. Usually what do you hear people say? You know, I wasn't myself out there.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't me out there.
Yeah.
That's when you hear people have regret. No one ever regrets. They're like, yo, I was just 100% me. I did my thing out there. I did exactly what I wanted to do. I turned my personality up to 10. And I don't feel great about it. You never hear that.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Sure. It's just not part of the narrative of human endeavor. When you're yourself, and I've been guilty of this in the past, I thought when I had hurt my shoulder, I was like, you know what? I should just have the gym, and that's what you're supposed to do, and settle down, and, be in one spot, and, you know, punch the clock, and make money, and hustle, and make as much money as possible. And I did that for a few years, and it just wasn't me. And even though I did a good job at it for a little bit, there's only so long before the universe catches up with you. And this is going to sound silly, but I remember I just felt like the gods were telling me, Odin's like, am I a god of merchants or a god of fucking warriors? He's like, I only have 3 followers as it is. You know? he's like, you want to get locked in the shop. He's like, would you go out and make some adventure? I'm like, you know what? I do need to adventure. It's fun.
Yeah.
I'm making great stories. I really should write a book about the whole comeback. Because 3 years ago, when I closed my gym, my wife and I were bankrupt. And, I mean, we were homeless for a little bit. I was sleeping. I lost my house.
Wow.
And, like, so I had a house in Bayside. And we lost that house in, like, February of 2016. So then we were sleeping in the back of the gym until I closed my gym in August. And then we were, like, sleeping in the car for, like, a month until I wound up back in Brooklyn. So yeah, 3 years ago, we were homeless. And then 3 years later, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah,
and I'm winning fights in the Garden, so that's definitely
you should write a book.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Something to be said about that.
Something humongous to be said about that. I mean, you're a fighter to begin with, so I wouldn't expect anything less.
You know, it's funny. You know the kid Kaz, he fought right after me for winning. So Kaz, when like we were in the gym the other day, and one of his boys was there, and he was like, you know, this fucking guy was homeless 3 years ago. I was like, he's like, I hope you don't mind. I was like, no, I mean, you know, it's not the first thing I say, but I was like, I could see how that's like pretty crazy.
No, you know.
I'm like, that's a good place for most people to give up.
That's it.
There's a lot of places to give up there.
Mm-hmm.
Or just punch the clock and just do regular shit. Like, what the hell do you want to fight again? Oh, my God. And you want to talk about pressure? So it's my wife's birthday that night.
Yeah.
So it's my wife's birthday. I'm like, shit, don't wind up in the hospital. You know, like win or lose. I'm like, just don't wind up in the hospital on her birthday.
Yeah.
All right. And so when I told her, I was like, listen, but it's on your birthday. She was like, well, I couldn't ask for a better birthday present. And my wife's such a J. So I was like, all right, great.
That's awesome.
And, you know, she was nervous. And then I don't know if you knew my boy, James Gabbert.
No.
He's an old school fighter. We used to fight back in the day together. We were on Ring of Combat cards together. in the early 2000s. So I know this guy for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. And 8 days before my fight, he committed suicide.
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry to hear that.
So 8 days. So my last sparring, I do my last sparring session 8 days before my fight. Oh. So I'm in the bathroom taking a crap. And I'm on my phone. And I see one of my training partners has a picture of him and Gabbert together in the ring. Right? Because Gabbert is a Muay Thai coach. A badass Muay Thai fighter. Fought all over the world. Never really could make a weight class because he was a type 1 diabetic.
Oh, wow.
So he was a type 1 diabetic. So he was, like, fighting at what he walked around at, like, 175, 185. Fought Mike Swick and WEC. Jorge Rivera, this kid had fucking great fights back in the day. Unheralded. So, so I'm in the bathroom, and I see this picture, and it just has, like, a broken heart. And I put my phone away. I was like, I got to do my last sparring tonight.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to even – I was like, I hope – you know, nothing bad. I was like, I hope it was just like an accident and, you know, he's in the hospital or whatever and I'll deal with it when I'm done. And I hear Drago talking to Hire and I pass him Thursday night. I wanted to spar with Pumi because he's short. My opponent is fast. Sure, you know. So I do 3 fives with Pumi. I finish. I do a little bit of cardio. And I go to Hire. I was like, yo, what happened? He's like, you know what happened? I was like, no, I don't. I was like, I was in the bathroom. I seen something. I was like, but I put it away. I want to spar. Yeah. He's like, you really want to hear it now? I was like, I'm done sparring. I'm good. That was my last hard session. Well, last hard sparring. I was like, I'm good. Yeah. And he was like, Gabbert, you know, killed himself. And I was like, oh, man, what the fuck? So I go in the back. I cry for 15 minutes. And I'm just like, fuck, that guy. And when I first wanted to come back, after 10 years, I went to Gabbert. And I was like, yo. I'm like, listen, I'm like, I haven't sparred in like 2-3 years at least, and not hard. I was like, I know you from back in the day. I'm like, keep an eye on me. I sparred his kid, Vinny, who's like an up-and-coming Muay Thai fighter. I was like, you know, make sure I don't die. Let's see how it looks. So I get my ass kicked. You know, I'm like, all right, boom. I did like 3 twos. I was dying. Then we worked up, you know, after like 6 minutes. Oh. He had just to say, oh, man, I'm losing. It's not going to get worse. It's not going to get worse. I was like, yeah, well, I hope not. So he believed in me more than he believes in himself. And that was sad for me. And in the fight, so the fight's like a psychedelic experience for me. Now I'm in the fucking fight. And I hear him so clear in my head. There was, so we used to call it, so when you're in a guy's guard and you go body, body, head, we called that, like our code word for that was Midwest.
Okay.
It was the first time we had seen guys do that. It was like 1999, 2000. It was like Pat Miletich and Matt, they would, those Midwest guys would be in the ground. They would go body. They would put one leg up, right leg up. If it was a right body, body, head. And we were like, oh, Midwest. Okay, so we call that Midwest. And I'm in fucking Kenny's guard. And I hear him like, Midwest. It's like, Manimal, Midwest. And I'm like, body, body, head, bad. And he's like, Midwest, do it again. He's sucking for that. And I'm hearing him in my head in the fight. I mean, clear as fuck, as if he's in my corner.
That's amazing.
It was good to be able to. And the night, so the day of my weigh-in, I weigh in the morning, and Gabbert's memorial service is that night out east in Long Island. And I live in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So I weigh in the morning, do the ceremonial weigh in at 1. I get back to Brooklyn at like 4. I eat something. I'm trying to rehydrate, right? I bring my gallon of water with me. I bring my electrolyte mix. I bring all my snacks. Me and my wife drive out there an hour. I go there for a while. My wife's like, listen, John, you got to get some sleep. You got to come back home. It's starting to get late. It was like 9:30 at night. Everyone's there. And Long goes there. He's like, I can't believe you came. I was like, bro, me and this guy were close. Like,
yeah.
And you know, it's a shame. I do Jeet Kune Do, I'm a stick fighting, you know, Kali. I'm a stick fighting champion and a knife fighting champion.
That's awesome.
So I love the martial arts. I love all the martial arts. I love stick, awesome. Knife. I fight sword and shield, European style.
Love it.
So when it's like, I have 6 professional fights, I'm like, you don't understand. I have 6 professional MMA fights.
Yeah.
I was like, but my fighting experience, I was like, I love combat. Like, I do all different stuff. You have to take that into account. So I'm a stick fighting champion. And Gabbert trained with Dan and Asanto. And so we used to do full contact stick, me and him in the cage. We would put the armor on, we would go in the cage and do it at Longo's. And they would be like, what the hell's wrong with these guys? So I remember before my fight, like 2 weeks before my fight, 2 weeks before he died, I was like, after my fight, I was like, I can't do it now. I was like, a stick fighting is like hard on your body.
Yeah.
I was like, listen, I can't do it now. I was like, but after my fight, once my injuries heal up from the fight, I was like, we gotta throw the fucking gear back on and start stick fight. And he was like, yeah, of course, man. I was like, whenever you're ready. And I'm ready. I'm ready now. I'm ready now. So it's a shame. You know, and I was telling Ray, I was like, fuck, you know, it's hard to find guys to do that with. And it's like, man, 2 months after, I was like, I'm actually ready now. You know, now would be the time that I would have been like, oh, man, let's get the armor, you know, let's do it. 2 months after my fight, nothing on the horizon. Now is like the perfect time to pick the sticks up and beat the shit out of each other. So, you know, there's not a lot of guys like that around. And it's a shame when you lose them. And I said, I'll see him in Valhalla.
You know, absolutely.
When I say I'm the son of Odin, it's actually a lie. All warriors of merit are the sons of Odin. So yeah, am I the son of Odin? Sure, but the metaphor is that if Odin's the god of war, all warriors that are of merit, that do it for the love of battle, if you fight for the pure love of combat, you have to go to Valhalla when you die. So, and we're all the sons of Odin. So yeah, so I was like, oh, I'll see Gabbert on the other side. And it's funny. Okay, can I get weird?
Yeah, oh, please. You're in the right company if you want to get weird.
Can I? Okay.
Yeah, always.
So I don't know if you ever heard me talk about work I do with astral projection.
So I
leave my body and I go into the other world.
Stop. I am so beyond it. Okay. I believe, and not that I just believe, like, I know I have crazy psychic tendencies on so many different levels. So if you want to get weird on that, like, if you walked into my house, like, everybody, when they first walk in, they're like, yo, your house kind of weird. There's crystals everywhere. There's fucking, I have crazy shit all over the place.
So you'll appreciate this.
All about that. So go on.
So I don't like to leave my body during fight camp. I want my spirit to get used to not moving. And the night he died, I couldn't help it. I went to the other side. You know, I left my body. And you have to remember, I'm completely sober during fight camp. I haven't smoked weed. I haven't done anything, right? I get drug tested. So this is just, and I leave my body. So my spirit leaves my body. I put my consciousness in it. And I find James in the other world, and I'm trying to talk to him, and he just looks so lost. He just fucking hurt, you know? And I was like, and I thought to myself, I was like, he's lost now. I was like, but when I invoke his memory in the cage, that's going to enliven his spirit. But it was tough because I was trying to, like, hug him in the other world, in my spirit, and he just had his arms down and was just looking, like, straight ahead. He just looked lost. And but when I felt his presence in the cage, it was good. You know, but when I went to the other world, it was a little sad for me. You know, because you don't know how everyone's going to be showing up on the other side.
Yeah.
And, so I have a whole life in the spirit. A whole life in the spirit that's different from my life.
How do you achieve that?
I've been doing this for years. So there's a process. So I like to do it at night personally, but or on the plane. I love projecting on the plane. I don't know why. I have a lot of time there where I can just be quiet. So I close my eyes and I'm close to outer space anyway. So
is it also you meditate and get to the point where you're, because this is, I read in a book that some people get to where they're almost sleeping, but they're consciously, like, you're conscious that you're almost sleeping, but you're also conscious that you're waking, you're not moving.
I'm conscious that
you know what I mean? Like, you know what's going on, and you know not to move, so you get to that state.
It looks like I'm sleeping, but it's even more than that.
Okay.
Because, like, I remember once I'm on the plane, and I left my body, and my wife is trying to wake me up. And I could have just been dead right there. Like, I'm almost in, like, temporal stasis at that point.
Wow.
So what I do is I project. I imagine my spirit slowly coming out of my body. and I visualize myself in the exact position I'm in. There comes a point where when you do that and your spurs coming out, that what happens is you wind up looking at your body from above it.
So that happened to me on drugs once, and I told people, I'm like, I was my soul that exited my body, and I was watching you guys from above.
Yeah, so I'm in. So once that happens, that means if I can see my body, that means my consciousness is in my spirit.
Yeah.
So I'm there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I just stayed. So when I'm there, what happens when you were there? You got nervous about it. You're like, this is weird. When I'm there,
no,
I just stay
dude,
there.
Dude, I was chilling. I was on.
Oh, you were chilling.
Literally, I was tripping out with my friends, and I was like, all right, well, I'm accepting whatever this is, and I just was chilling for a little while.
So once I see my body, then I know I can start moving around.
That's amazing.
I just start navigating, and I've been doing it long enough, and you can wind up anywhere. I mean, that's the astral plane should touch all the worlds, so then you can wind up anywhere after that.
Well, there's saints that were able to they would say, I think they would call it astral project. There's a book of saints and saints that could be at two places at once, healing somebody in one place and, you know, being in another place. But there's major accounts of it. So it's not like that it's not possible. Just people are so close-minded.
I do a lot of healing work also. And then when I project, I could definitely heal. I heal myself only when I project. I can't do it. Well, not that I can't, but I find it very difficult to do healing work on myself in my physical body. I actually have to leave, turn around, to work on myself.
I like that.
I've been doing for a couple of years, and it's been okay. I broke my finger 5 weeks out from my fight in sparring. I didn't even realize I was so tired. I just went to sleep. I wake up in the morning. I was like, oh, damn. And then I worked on it. You know, listen, it's not... I know it sounds like magic, but it actually takes time. Everything's energy. So that energy to work on the flesh is energy that helps heal, but it still is just energy exchange. Yeah. It's just a certain amount of energy it takes to heal something. And your body does some. Medicine can do some. Supplements can do some. My projection does some. So I want to take all the percentages I can get and add them together and have the most optimal situation possible. But yeah, I've been doing work in the spirit for a long time. Plus, as a follower of the old ways, Odin is the prototypical shaman. He travels all the worlds. When you read the Heimskringla, it says how he goes into a trance-like state and then can leave his body. So he's the if you emulate that path, you can do all those things. Healing, rune work. So we work with the runes. The runes is the alphabetical system of the the Vikings. Yep. It's our alphabet also. It looks just like the Germanic alphabet.
Yeah.
And each rune has a different aspect that when you know the rune, that energy is an archetype of something like, let's say, healing or strength or courage.
Yeah, they have them at like crystal stores and stuff. They'll have runes.
Now the rune, yeah, they do have runes because some people like to use them for divination.
Yeah.
I use them more for different work. But yeah, I use a lot for protection.
Okay.
You know, I safely to the battle we ride, safely we come back. So I use the runes for protection.
Do you have any
possible.
Moldavite? You should look into it if you don't.
Moldavite?
Yeah.
No, I don't think
it's
so.
My brother gave it to me. It's a piece of a, I don't know if it's a piece of a meteorite, that hit, and they get it from wherever the meteor hit over in Europe. And it's a piece from
meteor that hit in Russia.
It's green.
Fire.
And you can hold it and feel a really bizarre energy that you'll never feel with any other crystal. Because
really?
It comes from the sky. It comes from the universe. So I consider it to be like a really spiritual, almost holy piece of crystal.
Well, that's what Thor's hammer is symbolic of, meteorite.
See?
And the Vikings
you should get
like Moldavite. And the Vikings did like to forge weapons out of meteorites. Because meteorites, you'd have small pieces.
So
and then you'd take a bunch of those small pieces, put them together, and then you would make the mask of steel, right? You would pattern weld these small pieces, and that makes a very powerful, very hard steel. So that makes sense. Moldavite.
You know, if I
ever
run into Moldavite, I'm getting it for you.
All right. Sounds good. Carrie, we should hang out one day. I want to work on your shoulder.
I'm totally down.
Fix you up. You could teach me how to play pool.
I'm totally down. I'm totally down. And you know,
smoke
before we go, because I know it's a Friday night, you're probably gonna your wife's ready to kill us. But probably, I'm definitely down. And we will talk about that. I want to come train with you.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, when you come to Lowell one night.
Yeah,
I definitely will. You come on MMA and Beyond.
I
Sunday nights, 9 o'clock.
I would love to.
Yeah, Sunday nights, 9 o'clock.
I don't have pool this Sunday, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, tell Ray. You know Ray, right?
Yeah. Let me know. Let me know.
Pretty fun.
Yeah.
Let me ask Ray. I'll ask Ray tomorrow. I got to do some sparring tomorrow.
Do another where I did in the girls' corner, like with Inked, and do it with like your tattoo artist, like we were saying yesterday. We'll do a whole another hour thing and get a whole bunch of people together.
Dope. Let me hit up Troy. I'll see what he says. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I got to finish up my tat. Definitely.
Awesome.
May as well. Praise the gods. Awesome. The one on my back is Odin's Ravens.
You were saying that.
Moon in, and the triangle knot. The knot of slain warriors. So, and that's the same thing on my ring, my wedding ring. I have the triangle knot, Odin's knot, and the two ravens. So I have that on my back. Odin's two ravens are Hugin and Munin, thought and memory. So a little metaphorical. And every day, Odin's ravens travel the world, and every night they report back to him what they see. And then the triangle knot is symbolic for me. I'm already dead. So you know how, like, the Stoics say, memento mori, like, remember you will die?
Yeah.
For the Vikings, it's like, I'm already dead. Already in Valhalla. So then I can do whatever I want in this life. This is a bonus round.
I love it.
I'm in the bonus rounds right now.
I love it.
I'm in the bonus rounds, Kerry. This is the bonus. Everything now is bonus time.
Hey, you woke up 6 feet above ground. It's a great day, you know?
Way above. High as a kite.
Just where you should be.
Hold on. Last thing before we get off. Fights tomorrow night. Who are you picking?
Oh, definitely Nate Diaz. A lot of people are like, oh, he's been off 3 years. Like, that guy trains harder than anybody else. And
he looks jacked, too.
Dude. He looks insanely jacked.
You know I like Nate.
I think Stipe's going to take it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I like DC. DC.
I mean, I love DC, but I think
I can see Stipe winning, but I'm going to pick DC.
Okay.
And, man, I want to pick Romero, but I don't know why I have a feeling Paulo Costa might win.
I know. Because Romero, we've seen him get him gas out early. So, you know, it could go either way.
Yeah. All right. And then who do you think is going to pop a drug test? I'm saying Paulo Costa.
Oh, I think Romero.
Romero.
Yeah.
Both.
Maybe Diaz. For
Stipe.
Pot.
Stipe is going to pop a drug test.
That's the only thing I'll pop for is pot. That's it.
Maybe. All right. Kerry, awesome talking to you.
Let me ask everybody where they can follow you.
Oh, guys, I'm easy to follow. At John the Manimal Benedici. My Instagram is popping. Oh, I do a training camp upstate September 21st, 22nd. My VIP spots are sold out, but I still have some single day spots left. So manimaltrainingcamp.com. But really, just follow me at John the Manimal Benedici, and you can see all my stuff there. Really excited talking to you. And you got
to
help me out with my Twitter.
Yeah, we got to do this more often. And let me know about Sunday.
And
we will definitely link up. I'll teach you some pool. We'll do a whole bunch of shit.
Cool. Sounds great, Kerry.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, John. Thank you so much.
All right. You're the best. Good night.